The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
I'm Frank Holland, and you're listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. Our show is live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern. Listen in. It is 5 a.m. at CNBC Global Headquarters, 10 a.m. in London. I'm Frank Holland, and here is your 5 at 5. Stock coming off a losing week despite a Friday rally. Futures are fighting to carry that momentum over to the new trading week. That rally coming on the back of a blowout jobs report, throwing expectations around the Fed's rate cut path out the window. The new reality of on when or if at all those cuts may actually occur. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen working to thread the needle as she wraps her meetings with Chinese leaders. Our Sarah Eisen is on the ground in Beijing with an exclusive one-on-one with the secretary in just a moment. Plus, more troubles for Boeing as it grapples with yet another incident involving one of its planes. And investors piling into stocks during the first quarter, but a different strategy by some high-profile executives that are looking to cash in. It's Monday, April the 8th, 2024, and you are watching Worldwide Exchange right here on CNBC. Good morning. Welcome to Worldwide Exchange. We are coming to you from live from CNBC London. Thank you so much for being here with us. Let's kick off the hour as we always do with a check of U.S. stock futures. And taking a look at the futures on the back of that blow-up jobs report, we are seeing futures looking like they're going to get off to a down start to start this week. Right now, it looks like the Dow would open up just about 35 points lower. The S&P and the NASDAQ firmly in the red as well. Looking back at last week, we saw the markets in the red as well. The Dow leading the losses down more than 1.5%. We're also taking a look at the bond market this morning on the back of that jobs report. Looking at yields, both the 2-year and the 10-year hit their highest levels since November of last year. Right now, the benchmark coming in at 4.45%. We'll continue to look at those yields and the impact on the markets throughout the show. We also want to check oil, hovering at its highest level since late October, up more than 4% last week. Taking a look right now, you're looking at WTI, the U.S. benchmark, down about 0.75%, trading at about 86 and a quarter a barrel. Brent crude, the international benchmark, trading at about 90.50 a barrel, also down 0.75%. Let's now see how Europe is shaping up as its trading day gets underway. Sylvia Amaro is here with me with that early action. Sylvia.
That's right, Frank. It's good to have you in London. So far, though, it's been a fairly muted trading session here in Europe. Equities have been trading for about 2 hours, and this is the picture across the main bourses. We're having the FTSE 100 here in Europe trading just below the flat line. Over in France, the CAC 40 is up by about 0.4%, and similar moves in Germany. All in all, investors are waiting for that key central bank meeting by the European Central Bank on Thursday. And the key question is whether we'll get some certainty about that potential first rate cut. In terms of sectors, this is the picture in Europe at this stage. We have at the top autos trading up by about 1.2%, basic resources as well up by about 1.2%. At the other end, we have media down by about 0.3%, household goods also struggling at this stage, financial services as well. And as I said, Frank, all of this as investors are pretty much on that wait and see mood to wait and really understand what the European Central Bank is going to tell us.
All right, Sylvia, thank you very much. All right, turning now back to the U.S., we're following some breaking news. The Biden administration announcing fresh funding from the CHIPS Act, giving it to Taiwan Semiconductor. The company will be given $6.6 billion in grants and $5 billion in loans to support the construction of semiconductor production factories in Phoenix, Arizona. Taiwan Semi is adding a third facility in addition to the two that have already been announced. Megan Casella will join us just a little bit later with more on this story. But right now, looking at Taiwan Semi, those shares up over 1% in the U.S., overseas up just under 0.5%. All right, moving on. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen winding down her visit to China after a busy weekend meeting with leaders there. Yellen looking to thread the needle of tough talk and fostering relations in Beijing. And Beijing is where we find our Sarah Eisen, who sat down exclusively with the secretary just a short time ago. Sarah, good morning, or should I say good evening there in Beijing?
Good morning in London. Good evening here from Beijing, where Treasury Secretary Yellen just wrapped up a busy 5 days here in China. First, she was in Guangzhou in the south, and then in Beijing, where she met with numerous top officials, government officials, students at Peking University, took cultural tours. She received a warm welcome here everywhere she went, Frank, but did deliver a tough message, particularly when it comes to this issue of overcapacity. This idea that Chinese government has been subsidizing industries like EVs, lithium-ion batteries, and solar panels, flooding the world with these cheap exports. So that's where I started our conversation.
Well, they certainly listened, and I think they understood that this is something that's very important to the U.S., but as I emphasized, and I think they've also heard, we're not the only country that's concerned about a flood of Chinese exports wiping out important firms and industries in our country. And clean energy is something that is an innovative area that will be growing over time. We want to make sure that this is an opportunity for our workers and our firms to participate in this industry. Europe, Japan, other countries feel the same. It's fine for Chinese for China's firms to export in this industry, to develop it. But some of the techniques that they use, subsidizing their firms very heavily, and then supporting them even when they're losing money, when demand is weak relative to this great capacity to supply products like solar panels, prices just plummet and it can drive our firms out of business. And this is something that's unacceptable from the U.S. point of view, and many of our allies feel the same way. So I think that they understand it. It's been part of their industrial strategy. It reflects the importance that they attach to advanced manufacturing. It also reflects a shortage of demand in their economy, so that they're investing heavily in manufactured goods that can be exported. And these are things that really can lead to trade tensions going forward, which we would like to avoid.
Well, I was going to ask if you actually expect them to do anything about it. Already there was a headline today that the commerce minister in China said that those accusations are groundless.
Well, I do think that they understand where we're coming from, and they have agreed to continue an intensive dialogue on this issue. I think they understand that it's important, and they do have tools that they could use. Perhaps that would take a while to have an effect.
Like export restrictions?
Well, I'm not thinking so much of export restrictions as some shifts in their macroeconomic policy and a reduction in the amount of particularly local government subsidies to firms in these industries.
I was going to ask what's at stake economically, because, I mean, the world, don't we need green technology? We need EVs. We need solar panels. It's been a big push by the Biden administration. So what are you afraid of?
Well, we do. And there's going to be a growing, we expect and we hope, because we want to deal with climate change, we expect a global economy in which the demand will be increasing. And there's nothing wrong with investing in these industries and developing capacity.
Because we do it, the Inflation Reduction Act.
We do it too. We just want to make sure that we're not driven out of business and that our firms and workers have opportunities in these industries, which will be important ones in our future.
If they don't shift, are we looking at potential tariffs on these products?
Well, I wouldn't rule anything out at this point. We need to keep everything on the table, want to work with the Chinese to see if we can find a solution. We are engaging in a four-year review of Section 301 tariffs. That's not complete, so I can't really speak to what will come of it. I wouldn't rule anything out, but I think we need to deal with this issue.
Those were the tariffs that were imposed during the Trump administration.
That's right.
That you've
That's
kept. Right. Are they still very concerned about that? Did you hear about that in the meetings?
They usually raise the issue of the 301 tariffs. They've said for a long time that they would like to see them reduced. Of course, they were put in place because there were findings of unfair trade practices against the United States. And Vice Premier Hu, who's my counterpart, and I have agreed that while trade and investment between our two countries is beneficial and desirable, it needs to be on a level playing field. And in a number of ways, we feel it's not. So we're really raising this issue in that context. I think we also feel, especially after the pandemic, that the resilience of our supply chains is something we need to take more, pay more attention to. And being overly dependent on any single country for a very important good that's used in your economy can lead to a dangerous fragility in supply chains. And in the case of some of these clean energy goods, electric batteries, the minerals that go into them, solar panels, we have been very, very heavily dependent on China. And that's another reason that we and other countries want to have some domestic capacity ourselves.
You mentioned other countries, but China has been flooding Europe, for instance, with cheaper EVs. Can you blame Europe, which doesn't have as much growth right now as the U.S., for having closer trade ties with China?
Well, I mean, Europe and China do have close trade ties. Europe benefits from exports to China. But on the other hand, the car industry is very important in countries like Germany. Europe doesn't want to see these industries destroyed. They're an important source of jobs and very valuable ones with good pay.
So should they increase protections to prevent all of these EVs from flooding their market?
They have started an investigation of whether or not there's dumping of electric vehicles by China in their markets. And, you know, many countries have ways of investigating dumping, preventing it by putting tariffs in place. And that's something that WTO rules permit.
We have tariffs. We haven't seen Chinese EVs in the U.S. Should they be allowed to sell their EVs in the United States?
I mean, they are allowed to sell their EVs in the United States. We don't have rules against it. Again, in that area as well, we're trying to foster a domestic industry. We're certainly open to imports, including those from China. There are no rule against China selling EVs in the United States.
But we have higher tariffs than on them than Europe.
We do have tariffs on them, I believe. But, you know, this is for us an important industry.
You also spoke about TikTok in some of the meetings, and I am curious what the Chinese reaction is to the legislation that President Biden did say he would sign if it passes Congress.
Well, I think this is an important and profitable company, and I think they're concerned by the prospect that they would be forced out of the United States, or what the legislation really requires is that they would sell the company to a domestic purchaser. So I think they certainly have concerns about that.
Do you think the Chinese government will allow the U.S. assets sold to U.S. investors or U.S. company?
I honestly don't want to get ahead of where we are on this. The president has said he would sign the House legislation.
You also brought up matters of national security on this trip and said that there would be consequences for China if they increase support militarily for Russia. And we also heard this week reportedly from Secretary of State Antony Blinken, who said that that was happening on a large scale. So are we looking at sanctions on Chinese companies?
Well, it's not only Chinese companies. We would feel that any financial institution that facilitated trade in dual-use goods or strictly military goods in violation of our sanctions and aiding Russia's military, we would consider sanctioning. The president issued a recent executive order that would enable Treasury to impose sanctions on financial institutions that are found to be doing this in a systematic way. And we've not used this tool yet, but it is one that would be available. And what I've tried to make clear is that we stand ready to act if we see significant violations by, especially by financial institutions.
In China?
Well, and other countries as well.
What about the Chinese government and its support of Russia?
Well, China is entitled to have a relationship with Russia. What we have made clear is that it is unacceptable to us for China to support Russia militarily. And that's doesn't say that China can't have a relationship with Russia. China and Russia do a lot of trade. Much of it is unproblematic, but anything that involves aiding Russia's military in their brutal war against Ukraine is unacceptable to us, and we have the ability to sanction it.
We've also seen increasingly close economic ties between China and Iran. And especially now with Iran increasing threats against Israel, I do wonder how concerned you are and American businesses should be about this.
Well, we have very strong sanctions in place against Iran. And when we encounter ongoing violations, we've had a number of sanctions actions that have tried to address that. That's an area of great concern.
But just in terms of China's relationship with Russia, with Iran, is that a matter that U.S. businesses who do a lot of business in China should be concerned about?
To the extent that it creates a national security risk for us, it is something we stand ready to address.
Should American companies be reducing their exposure to China on a manufacturing basis?
Look, I think trade and investment between China and the United States is valuable. Many American companies are doing excellent business in China, have been here for a long time. The same is true of Chinese companies in the United States, and this trade is beneficial. And the great majority of it is uncontroversial. And I think we should not do anything to impede that trading and investment relationship. But in areas where we have national security concerns, as we have clearly demonstrated, we stand ready to act to protect our national security. That may mean export controls or other interventions. And we try to target those narrowly so that they don't have broad-based impact on China's economy as a whole. And we feel strongly and have agreed with the Chinese that we need a level playing field. Now, when we interfere, when we have regulations that affect our trade and investment with China, if it's national security or other reasons, we go through an open and transparent rule-writing process. We put out proposed regulations. We accept comments. The Chinese have the opportunity to comment. We take the input and we write regulations. It's very clear what we're doing. In China's case, often the support, we believe there's maybe often a lot of support, in ways that are not transparent. And that really is a meaningful difference. But we're not trying to stifle trade and investment, broadly speaking. So I would not want to advise American firms don't do business in China.
But if I'm Tim Cook of Apple and looking at the geopolitical relationship and the national security concerns, ultimately, won't that trump the economic relationship?
Well, the purpose of the dialogue that I've been involved with now for well over a year with our Chinese counterparts is intended to make sure that that does not happen, that we don't have an unintended escalation of tensions, that we understand one another's red lines, we avoid misunderstandings, and we preserve economic interactions that are beneficial to both sides. We manage our relationship. We need to manage it responsibly so that both sides can continue to benefit.
You've put a lot of work into this, and you said in your news conference this afternoon that the relationship is in a better place than it was a year ago.
Definitely.
Do you worry about the relationship in 1 year from now if President Trump gets reelected?
Look, I don't want to get into politics. I'm governed by the Hatch Act. I feel President Biden and President Xi directed myself and the Vice Premier He Lefeng to work toward a better, more stable, predictable relationship with one another, to stabilize our relationship, to try to manage our differences, create better channels of communication, and importantly, work together on many things where we can both make contributions that are important to the globe, whether it's dealing with climate change or other issues, public health issues, debt issues of low-income countries. And that's what we're trying to do. We have greatly deepened our relationships, and I feel our relationship in this economic sphere is in a much better place.
One thing that's helped the dynamic is the U.S. is coming with a strong hand right now on our economy.
I think we can feel great about our economy.
I was going to ask you what you made of this last jobs report.
Well, it just shows that U.S. is firing on all cylinders. I mean, in terms of short-term performance, inflation is coming down. The job market is very strong. Growth is really been a lot stronger than I would have expected at this stage. We had 3.1% growth last year. Inflation's coming down. Labor supply is up. And we're seeing some of the pressures we might worry about coming from the labor market impacting inflation. They're subsiding, but unemployment remains very low.
You're still confident we can get to 2% this year? We've seen a little bit of a flare-up so far this year.
Well, I think it will continue to come down over time. That's my expectation. And, I'm hopeful that we can certainly get into the twos.
And recovery stays intact with or without Fed rate cuts?
So I'm not going to make a forecast on Fed rate cuts. The Fed has indicated that they want to make sure that inflation's really coming down and that they're obviously considering rate cuts that would be appropriate when they reach that judgment. And we've had generally good news on inflation. Let's look at the data. I believe inflation will continue to come down.
Yeah, and I guess I'm just wondering if the economy continues to hold up no matter what happens on the Fed.
I think that we've got a good, strong economy. We've got very strong domestic demand. Consumers are holding up. Some low-income consumers are perhaps exhausting their buffers of saving that they built up during the pandemic. We're seeing a little bit more distress at the household level there. But generally, households are in very good financial shape. Our financial system is generally quite strong. Things can always happen. There's always recession risk. Geopolitical developments could create risk to our economy. But I think we've got a good, strong economy that's on a solid track.
clearly Secretary Yellen still pretty optimistic, calling it a good, strong economy. And Frank, that really does illustrate a change in the dynamic here in her discussions with China, where she characterized the economy as weaker and plays into the fact that they have been trying to boost it by investing in manufacturing of green exports, for instance, while she's trying to encourage them to boost their economy by going the consumption route. And if there's one thing, Frank, that I learned in all these discussions that she had is they didn't just treat her as a politician. They treated her as a foremost economist, which she was, which is why I had to ask about the Fed. She's a former Fed chair. And that gave her a unique, I would say, diplomatic edge in confronting them on some of the tougher issues.
Well, number one, Sarah, great interview as always. I'm sure you learned a lot more than just one thing. Very insightful, a lot to touch on. But I want to hit on one thing. You know, Janet Yellen really emphasized they greatly deepened their ties, a more stable relationship. But at the same time, she used some very tough language when they talked about when she talked about overcapacity of things like EVs and solar panels. Unacceptable. And then conversely, the Chinese commerce minister is calling these claims groundless. How does that all get balanced going forward as we try to improve these relationships?
So that's the question, Frank, which is, will China respond? Which is why I pressed her a number of times on how did they react to those criticisms and concerns about overcapacity, especially because we've been following the state media and the reaction from the Chinese officials, and it's been more dismissive of these overcapacity concerns. In fact, some of the state, the Xinhua commentary, which is the state media outlet, called it Sinophobic, which clearly tells you that they see this as a political maneuver by the U.S. The question is, will they respond? And all she told me there was that they are listening. They hear us. They clearly respect her views on the economy. The question is, will the U.S. have to impose tariffs or some other kind of restrictions to prevent China from dumping and, as she characterized it, really hurting and threatening American industry? She said that is not off the table. So delivering a tough message on overcapacity, but in a unique sort of Janet Yellen way where she was welcomed and, and she was really loved, I have to say, wherever she went here. Social media outlets were obsessed, Frank, with her food choices, which restaurants she was going to, and even they were complimenting her dexterity using chopsticks.
Yeah, I saw the reports about her using chopsticks. Something on a more serious note we do have to touch on. You touched on it a bit. The Russian foreign minister arriving in Beijing as well to try to emphasize the ties between Russia and China. Did you have a chance to expand more on that?
So we did talk about this, and this was her other tough message, and that was a threat that there will be consequences, i.e. sanctions, if they do find that China, and she particularly threatened the financial institutions there on this front, was aiding the military efforts of Russia. Now, she said that Russia said they have a policy of not doing that, and it's perfectly okay that Treasury Secretary Yellen told me it's perfectly okay that they have a very open trade relationship, China and Russia, but that Russia, that the U.S. is monitoring how much, if at all, China is aiding the military and industrial complex. And if that turns out to be the case, they would use sanctions. And she specifically in the interview, I think, highlighted financial institutions as a threat on that. Who is financing those interactions, those transactions, in other words. And that's the sort of news that she has made here and the message she was sending, she says, to any country, but did it here in Beijing pretty forcefully.
All right. Our Sarah Eisen live in Beijing. A great and exclusive interview with Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen. Sarah, great
Thank
stuff
you,
as always, and good to see you. All right, let's get some reaction to what we just heard from Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen. Hung Tran is a non-resident senior fellow at the Atlantic Council's Geoeconomic Center. Good morning. It is great to have you here, especially on a day like this following that interview.
Good morning, and thank you for inviting me.
Was there something that stuck out in your mind either about the interview or some of the talk that we've heard today from the Chinese Commerce Minister and Janet Yellen? Two words that stuck out for me, groundless and unacceptable on both sides of the overcapacity conversation.
Well, that reflects the differences and the incompatibility between the Chinese system and our system. Janet Yellen was correct and quite correct in raising the issue of overcapacity. In particularly high-tech and green energy sectors. But from the Chinese point of view, that is just part of their strategy to develop new growth engine serving their economy and also the modernization of their economy and their military as well.
All right, so a lot of talk about the Chinese economy. You just heard Sarah say that Janet Yellen was trying to get Chinese officials to focus more on consumption as opposed to production. For the second straight year, Chinese officials, they've set a GDP growth target of the same target of 4%. In your mind, is some of this pushback really focused on that GDP target, or is this pushback, is it political?
Well, from the U.S. and Western economic point of view, China really has engaged too much on investment, which is a very high percentage of their GDP, highest in the world, and create a lot of waste and overcapacity, which they impose on through export to other countries with very cheap prices, causing problem there. And therefore, it is much more balanced and better for China if they can have more consumption, which is occupying a low percentage of GDP. From the Chinese point of view, however, they think through more supply side management rather than demand side management. They think that by developing new enterprises in new technologies, that will create good manufacturing jobs whose income would allow the workers to consume. That is how they can square the circle.
All right, I just want to correct myself. That GDP target is actually supposed to be, quote unquote, around 5%.
Right.
Hung Tran, thank you for being here. Thank you for your insight.
Thank you.
All right, we got a lot more to come here on Worldwide Exchange, and that includes that blowout jobs report throwing another wrench into Fed rate cut expectations, the new timeline on when easing may begin. Plus, much more in our exclusive sit-down with Janet Yellen and what her meetings with Chinese leaders, what they could mean for investing in that country. We have a very busy hour still ahead when Worldwide Exchange returns. Stay with us.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
What does it mean to be rich? Maybe it's less about reaching a magic number and more about discovering the magic in life. At Edward Jones, our dedicated financial advisors are the people you can count on for financial strategies that help support a life you love. Because the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Learn more about our comprehensive approach to planning at edwardjones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Hey, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. I am Frank Holland coming to you from CNBC London. Let's get you ready for the trading day ahead. As always, you pick up the half an hour with a check of U.S. stock futures. U.S. stock futures bouncing off their lows of earlier this morning, but still in the red. It looks like the Dow will open up just about 8 points lower. The S&P and the Nasdaq essentially flat right now. We also want to take a look at the bond market. We're seeing much more action in the bond market on the back of Friday's blowout jobs report. The yields on the 2-year and the 10-year at their highest level since November. Right now, taking a look at the benchmark at a 4.44%, the yield on the 10-year. All right, now we want to turn to some breaking news. The Biden administration announcing fresh funding from the CHIPS Act, giving it to Taiwan Semiconductor. Megan Casella joins us now live from D.C. with the details. Megan, good morning.
Good morning, Frank. So it's another big award from the CHIPS program. Taiwan Semi is on track to receive $6.6 billion in direct grants from the Commerce Department and up to $5 billion in loans from the CHIPS program. The company is also expected to tap the investment tax credit as part of the program, which will provide another 25% in subsidies on eligible spending. Now, in response, TSMC is expected to invest more than $65 billion in the Phoenix, Arizona area. They're going to be building a third fab in addition to those two that have already been announced. And their focus is going to be on those most highly sophisticated 2-nanometer chips. These are the most advanced ones that power AI systems, for example. So they'll be supporting customers like Apple and AMD and NVIDIA. It's the first time that these chips are going to be produced here in the U.S. Commerce expects that all three fabs will be fully operational by the end of the decade. Now, in all, this is likely to create some 6,000 high-tech jobs and another 20,000 in construction. Commerce says that this should be the largest foreign direct investment in in a new project in Arizona state history. Now, Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo, in celebrating this announcement, says that this money will strengthen national security, boost supply chain resiliency, and make the U.S. a, quote, technology manufacturing powerhouse. Now, Frank, this is the fifth award we've seen coming out of the CHIPS program, but it won't be the last. Commerce has a little over $22 billion left in grant money to give out, so there are going to be more announcements coming in the coming weeks. Frank.
Megan, thank you very much. Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo, she's going to join CNBC at 9:30 a.m. Eastern to talk more about this announcement and much more. Again, Gina Raimondo exclusively on Squawk on the Street at 9:30 a.m. talking about this award from the CHIPS Act and more. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen also sitting down with CNBC Sarah Eisen earlier today for an exclusive interview. She addressed a wide range of issues, including potential further U.S. tariffs on Chinese goods, as well as electric vehicles, green exports, and the ability of U.S. companies to operate in China.
Some of the techniques that they use, subsidizing their firms very heavily and then supporting them even when they're losing money, when demand is weak relative to this great capacity to supply products like solar panels, prices just plummet and it can drive our firms out of business.
Let's get some investor reaction now. Brendan Ahern is the chief investment officer at Crane Shares. Brendan, good morning. Good to see you.
Yeah, likewise, Frank.
So a lot of ground covered there in that interview with Janet Yellen. One thing that I'm sure made a lot of people's ears perk up is what she said about tariffs, saying that they're on the table, they're being reviewed. How should investors view that?
Well, certainly tariffs are a negotiating tactic. And so I think this is a way for the U.S. to extract some value out of the China side. So I think certainly China has a very dominant position in both solar and electric vehicle. And I think there's a desire, as Janet Yellen said, about raising domestic consumption. That's going to benefit all U.S. investors because of the exposure of U.S. multinationals to China's domestic economy.
One of the things that Janet Yellen also talked about is the fact that European officials, that they're investigating Chinese, as you mentioned, it called it dumping of electric vehicles and solar panels and things like that. Realistically, today, how big of a threat is that potentially to U.S. industries? As Janet Yellen mentioned, that there's no restrictions on China selling EVs in the U.S., but so far we haven't seen it.
Yeah, certainly you've seen a number of Chinese electric vehicle makers make inroads into the European market. Certainly auto manufacturing supports a lot of jobs. What you're seeing a little bit from the Chinese electric vehicle makers, companies like NIO, are actually building factories in Europe. So I don't think we should expect any imports of Chinese electric vehicles into the United States, but potentially maybe there's a way that these Chinese electric vehicles could actually manufacture those vehicles in the United States. And certainly those vehicles are available in pretty much everywhere in the world other than the United States, but very, very high tariffs. But maybe there's an opportunity to build them in the U.S.
Some of this protectionism talk that we're hearing, both the U.S. side and the Chinese side, how impactful is that potentially to a lot of the multinational companies here in the U.S. that have operations in China? What comes to mind is an Apple or a Nike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%, Frank. I think whether you're directly invested in China or not, you're implicitly invested through the very strong revenues of U.S. multinationals, certainly like Apple and Tesla, which actually face very, very steep challenges from local players, but certainly Nike and Starbucks and McDonald's and a whole host of others. And those profits they make in China then sent back to the United States. So thus far, there's an open playing field for these companies in China. Obviously, they have to abide by local rules and regulations. But I think it's important, as Janet Yellen said, if China can focus on raising domestic consumption, it'll really help a lot of U.S. multinationals in China, because they tend to be geared not just to the industrial sector like a Caterpillar, but many to the consumer, which we've seen a slow comeback in the post-zero COVID era thus far.
All right. Brendan Ahern, great to see you. Thank you for your time and your insight. You have a great day. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, Robert Frank lays out some of the moves that tech's biggest titans are making with shares of their own companies and what it could mean for the broader markets. Much more Worldwide Exchange coming up in just a moment.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. The first quarter saw plenty of investors piling in, just trying to capitalize on the market's strong start to 2024. But a number of high-profile executives going the opposite route, selling shares at the highest rate in years. Robert Frank joins us now with just how much insider selling we've seen so far this year. Robert?
Well, Frank, it was a lot. Now, typically, the first quarter is not a lot of selling. Usually, it's in the fourth quarter. But this year, we saw more than any first quarter since 2021. Total insider sales, including pre-scheduled trades, nearing $25 billion in the first quarter. That's according to Smart Insider. The selling is more than double the same quarter last year, and most of the sales were in tech. Jeff Bezos accounted for a third of all those sales, unloading $8.5 billion of Amazon shares in February. Unclear exactly what he plans to spend that money on, but Amazon CEO Andy Jassy also cashing in about $21 million worth of shares. That's equal to what he sold in 2022 and 23 combined. Mark Zuckerberg sold shares for the first time in 3 years. He cashed in $135 million worth of shares. Peter Thiel also selling for the first time in 3 years. He sold $175 million worth of Palantir. Snowflake's Frank Slootman cashed in $69 million of shares just weeks before he announced his own departure. Now, insider sales don't necessarily mean a top for these stocks, but studies do show, Frank, that these insiders tend to sell near or at the near-term peaks, and they certainly, based on the market's recent move, called it pretty well in that first quarter by selling.
All right, our Robert Frank with the latest numbers on insider selling. Robert, thank you very much. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, the new rate reality, what a better-than-expected jobs report, what that could mean for the Fed and the stocks' path forward. We will be right back after this break. Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. It's time now for your WEX wrap-up. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen telling us earlier this hour she's focused on keeping American companies from being run out of business when it comes to what she calls the flood of below-cost Chinese goods. Speaking with our Sarah Eisen, Yellen not ruling out potential tariffs if Beijing does not comply. President Biden will reportedly caution Beijing against meddling in the South China Sea during meetings with the leaders of Japan and the Philippines. That's according to the Financial Times. Officials say China is underestimating the potential for geopolitical escalation. Brazil's Supreme Court is investigating Elon Musk and alleged obstruction of justice around his social media platform X. Musk is challenging Brazil's call to block certain accounts on X, calling those restrictions unconstitutional. We are also watching shares of Tesla this morning. They're higher on the back of a report. Tesla has pulled the plug on plans for a low-cost vehicle as it faces intense competition from China. A Southwest Airlines Boeing 737 plane is back in Denver after an engine cowling fell off and it struck a wing flap during takeoff. Southwest and the FAA say they're both investigating the incident. That's now become a bit of a viral video. A United Steelworkers Union is reportedly pushing back on Nippon Steel's planned takeover of U.S. Steel. Workers are warning that deal could lead to further underinvestment in plants and even undermine national security. Back to the markets now. They're set to face a fresh test this week with March CPI. That's out on Wednesday. That report could be a critical gut check on inflation following 2 months of hotter than expected reads. Fears around reinflation reinforcing the Fed's wait and see approach when it comes to rate cuts. Traders are now betting on just one or even two cuts this year after starting the year predicting up to seven. Let's talk much more about this with Patrick Ferzetti, Rose Advisors at Hightower Managing Director. Also, Robert Schein, Blanky Schein Wealth Management Chief Investment Officer. Great to have you both here. Patrick, I'm going to start off with you right now. This week, after we saw a hotter than expected jobs report, what are you expecting when it comes to the markets? And even today, we saw futures lower and now they've moved higher.
Yeah, well, look, I think the big read is going to be the inflation data coming out on Wednesday. When we looked at the inflation readings in the payroll numbers last week, you know, the labor participation rate did tick up. I frankly think that's the only thing keeping a June rate cut on the table. Otherwise, I do think it's going to be pushed back. And I agree with every time the number of rate cuts goes down, I think that could put some pressure on the market. So we'll see what happens on Wednesday. And it could, if it's a hotter than expected read, or frankly, even in line, I think you could see some pressure on equity markets.
So, Robert, similar question for you. As I mentioned, futures were lower this morning. They're still in the red, but just certainly off of their lows. At the same time, we've seen bond yields on the 2-year and the 10-year hit their highest level since November. How do you see that impacting today's trading?
We're going to see global rate cuts this week kick off. And the Federal Reserve is going to have to keep higher for longer. And they're looking, they're actually searching for something that gives them any sign that they can actually join the party. But I don't know that it's going to happen sooner than later. I think June could be very questionable. So it could be kicked to September moving forward.
So, Robert, you have a lot of questions about, it sounds like, the CPI report that's coming up on Wednesday. In the meantime, how do you see investors reacting to some of this uncertainty about that June cut?
Yeah, I think it's a wait-and-see environment, especially for investors. Keep some powder dry. Take advantage of the opportunities. I mean, this has been a stock picker's market year-to-date. It's been continuing since 2023. That's how we're seeing it for our clients, and we're actually taking advantage of a lot of opportunities, even amidst all of this uncertainty, Frank.
All right, speaking of uncertainty, there were a lot of questions about the U.S.-Chinese relationship as recently as July when Janet Yellen visited. Now it seems like we're on a more of a path of better cooperation, but still some tough talk on both sides, Patrick. How do you see that relationship impacting the, you know, the U.S. stock market, but also big U.S. companies that do operations in China, you know, McDonald's, Starbucks, Nike, just some of the names that come to mind?
Sure. Well, look, the better trade relations are with China, I think the better it is for U.S. multinational companies. The interesting thing I see from China, though, if you actually look at the average investor in China, right, they've been burnt in their own stock market. They've been burnt in housing. When you look at things that they're investing in, right, and this plays in exactly to where rates are, et cetera. If you look at the move in commodities, particularly in the metals, that's showing that I believe that we're going to have inflation higher for longer, and likely that means we have rates higher for longer. And if you look at where the average Chinese investor is investing today, it's actually in gold. And so it may be a little surprising for people, but gold has been extremely strong. And I think that that's, you know, created some upward pressure on some of the commodities markets. And it's an indicator of expected inflation.
Yeah, one of the catalysts for gold has been buying by the Chinese central bank. But I want to switch gears a bit to another commodity, gas. Patrick, your pick for us today is kind of focused on gas. Give us the name and very quick the elevator pitch why you think that's a good stock to invest in today.
Yeah, actually, I don't think it's necessarily a play on commodities. It's Murphy USA, gas station and convenience stores, very simple business. I love these sort of, I think I call them, you know, value type pick. It's trading at 9x EBITDA. We've owned it for 10 years since it spun off of Murphy Oil. It's a well-run company, and you know they have very, very steady margins. And I like these sort of boring businesses, if you will. But they've had a tremendous track record. They buy back stock as well. Really, a good company to hold in a portfolio, and it's been a stalwart in our portfolio for 10 years, as I said.
All right, Robert, I want to come over to you. You're actually looking for opportunity in the liquid natural gas sector. ExxonMobil is a stock you're looking at for today.
At the end of the day, we have oil at $87 a barrel. We're going to see $100 by the end of the summer. Strong balance sheet, structural cost savings, healthy valuations right now. At the end of the day, it's very attractive. You're going to get paid while you wait, 3% dividend. And at the end of the day, you got geopolitical tensions all moving with wind in your sails. So that's why we like ExxonMobil at this moment.
All right. A lot to cover there, gentlemen. Thanks for rolling with it. Patrick Frizzetti, Robert Schein, great to see you both. One more time, we're going to take a look at futures right now. As we mentioned, futures have bounced off their lows of earlier today. However, still in the red. You can see actually the Dow taking a dip again, looking like it would open up about 20 points lower. The S&P and the NASDAQ basically flat to fractionally lower. There you saw the NASDAQ pop a bit. That's going to do it for us. You've been listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. You can always catch us live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.